We
are.
We
are.
We are cultivate.
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 We are cultivate.
Hello and welcome to Ye Olde Crime, where we discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear. I'm your host, Lindsay Valenti, and with me is my sister and co-host, Maddie Stengel.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Tell it to me, because I was gone last week.
Yep.
I got it. I'm catching up.
You got there. It's all good.
Got the last little bits of my move almost done, and it was quite the week to move. It was raining and cold. I'm happy to be back.
Well, before we get started, I once again want to do a shout out to our friend Carrie Ann, who is our research assistant. So thank you, Carrie Ann, for the work that you do. It makes my life much easier.
Thank you, Carrie Ann.
And this week, we will be discussing the Lady Juliana.
Ooh.
Information was pulled from the following sources: a 2023 allocation article by Ravi Rahan, 2021 academia.edu article by Joseph L. Davis, 2021 Ranker article by Sitara Janda, 2019 news.com article by LJ Charleston, a 2018 news.com article by LJ Charleston, 2016 Dictionary of Sydney article by Penny Edwell, 2007 Lady Julian poem, Free Settler or Felon Convict in Colonial History, Tasmanian Family History Society Incorporated, Hobart Branch, and 3 Wikipedia links. And links to all of these articles will be included in the show notes.
Nice.
If you want a playlist of all our episodes on YouTube, click the link in our show notes or in our link tree and subscribe today for not only a list of our full catalog, but a separate list as well, just of our Can You Crack the Cramp Word segments. After America's War of Independence concluded in 1783, Britain had to find a new place to dump their excess of convicts.
Oh.
Thankfully, they had already decided that New South Wales, aka Australia, was the perfect place to establish a penal colony.
Oh, so that's when they officially started.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot later than I thought.
I know.
I don't know why I thought Australia was colonialized a lot sooner.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they sent our convicts to they sent their convicts to America first. And then when we were like, piss off, ghost, they were like, okay, guess we're going to Australia.
Okay, bye. We'll just go south now.
A few years later, the British government sent 11 ships to New South Wales in 1787, consisting of 759 convicts, to establish a permanent penal settlement. The fleet, which was made up of 568 men, 191 women, and 13 children, sailed into Botany Bay, arriving in January of 1788.
Okay, so that would have been like pretty much peak of their summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what an introduction.
Hot. Within 3 days, they had chosen a site near Sydney Cove in Port Jackson, where they began to establish the convict settlement on January 26th. It wasn't long before the area became a hotbed of starvation, survival, and complete debauchery, with debauchery in this instance being gay sex.
Okay. So they just partied really hard.
Yeah.
To the point of starvation.
Yep. Unsurprisingly, the convicts weren't accomplished farmers.
What?
Right. And the bulk of the livestock that had traveled across the ocean with them had perished.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Noah's Ark didn't go that far.
No. He was like, that place has spiders. Really big spiders.
He's like, the water can take that one. I don't want the spiders.
Yeah, we're fine. Given the severe lack of women on the island, with the exception of the few that had been on the ships, the men that Britain had sent over to settle the continent just simply, quote, couldn't handle their urges, end quote.
Yeah, well, I mean, what else are you gonna do? If you don't have, like, any strong skill set, there's nothing to mess with. There's no homes to, like, ransack.
Yeah.
Because it'd be your own. You know, like, how else are they gonna get their thrills? Not condoning it, but yeah. It makes sense.
So they had taken to assaulting the Aboriginal women in the area, which is great.
Great. Awesome. So not only are they trying to take their lands, they're just taking things to take.
Things got so out of hand that Governor Arthur Phillip, who was a British Royal Navy officer that had been appointed the first governor of the colony of New South Wales, wrote to the British government begging for them to send more women to the growing colony.
Absolutely. Are you... No. No. No, Lindsay. No. It's already bad.
The second fleet consisted of six vessels: the Scarborough, Neptune, Surprise, Justinian, Guardian, and the Lady Juliana.
Surprise! It's more women.
It's thanks to Governor Phillip's missive that the British made the decision to send an all-women prisoner ship to New South Wales.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fighting fire with fire. All right, all right.
Maybe. Dubbed Lady Juliana, it was full of over 226 female con women, thieves, and sex workers from Newgate and county jails near Portsmouth. So Newgate was one of the more well-known prisons, and it was, like, bursting at the seams. So the government was like, please help us with this overcrowding problem and take these women. Like, we're fine with it.
Yeah.
The ship departed from England in July of 1789. Many of the women's offenses would be considered mild today, such as pickpocketing and shoplifting, though some had committed highway robbery.
So super petty crimes.
Yeah.
Not very aggressive.
Yeah. Nothing like they went on a murdering spree.
Dang. I was kind of hoping they were going to be more violent.
The 401-ton bark, which is a sailing ship with three masts, I looked it up.
Nice.
Was built at Whitby in 1769, and she set sail on July 29th, 1780, from Plymouth. For women like Mary Hook, who was 20 when she was thrown in prison for stealing money and goods from her employer, she saw her sentence commuted from capital punishment to a seven-year sentence in New South Wales. So that was pretty typical, as they were given 7 years.
Okay. So they tried to sweeten the deal. Like, we're not going to kill you anymore, and we're going to reduce your sentence significantly, depending.
Yeah. Deborah Davis had originally been sentenced to death by hanging after stealing £15 and 13 shillings, or around £1,200 today, from a customer of hers by the name of Timothy Toppings. Instead of being put to death, she was put on the ship for New South Wales.
So kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Four women, Elizabeth Riley, Mary Barnes, Anne Bryant, and Catherine Clark, were all sentenced to 7 years in New South Wales for stealing yards of fabric, while Mary Williams and Catherine White, who had been convicted of robbery, and Anne Doyle and Anne Poor had also been sentenced to 7 years for burglary.
Stealing fabric. Man, who knows what that could have been for.
To commute their sentences, the women were to marry the male colonists, recreating the British family unit in this savage new world.
Yeah, great choice, choosing potentially people with no aversion to risky behavior. Let's have them populate and see what happens.
Yeah. The goal of the penal colony was that these women would improve the moral culture, allowing the men to marry the reformed women so both could lead quote-unquote respectable lives as a married couple.
There it is. Don't worry, you guys. We won't give them any real shelter or food or means of doing either. But they will fix everything.
They are the Mr. Fix-It in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So this was all well and good, except for the fact that it was a ship full of women with an all-male crew, led by Captain Aiken. It didn't take long for many of the women to become lovers of not only the crew on the vessel, but also the ship's officers. The ship gained such a notorious reputation for all of its sexual exploits that it soon began to be called, quote, the Ship of Love, end quote, or its more unsavory nickname, quote, the Floating Brothel, end quote. Now, we have to bear in mind that voyages took much longer at this point in history. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Lady Juliana took almost a year to reach its final destination due to the fact that it made several lengthy stops along the way. These included at ports like Tenerife on September 21st, where four women escaped, Cape Verde, Rio de Janeiro, where they stayed for 45 days, and the Cape of Good Hope, where they spent 4 weeks.
Yeah, I bet. Because I bet the Cape of Good Hope messed up their ship and it took that long to fix it. Because isn't that one of like the worst capes?
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned that because at the Cape of Good Hope, they came upon the shipwreck of the HMS Guardian, which was part of that fleet.
Yeah.
Which had struck an iceberg and beached itself. The Guardian had been the store ship for the fleet. And the Lady Juliana was able to take on the remaining provisions, as well as 5 men who had been on the Guardian.
That's good that they were able to salvage anything.
Mm-hmm.
Dang, hit an iceberg. Oh.
Yeah. So I'm sure there were more than 5 men on the boat. I don't know what happened to the rest of them, but...
Yeah. Ghosts.
They joined Davy Jones' crew. Thanks to the writings of the ship's steward, John Nicol, we have a detailed account of the types of exploits that took place on the vessel.
Oh, no.
He even chronicled his own romance with a convict named Sarah Whitlam. One excerpt reads as follows. Quote, when we were fairly into our journey, every man on the ship took a wife from among the prisoners. The girl with whom I lived was named Sarah Whitlam. She was a native of Lincolnshire, a girl reserved and modest, as kind and true a creature as ever lived. I courted her for more than 2 weeks and would have married her on the spot had there been a priest on board. She had been banished for a petty amount she had borrowed from an acquaintance. Her friend prosecuted her for stealing it, and she was transported for 7 years. I had fixed my fancy upon her from the moment I knocked the rivet out of her irons upon my anvil, and as firmly resolved to bring her back to England when her time was out, my lawful wife, as ever I did intend anything in my life, end quote.
Aw, he was really smitten with her.
Mm-hmm. John was deeply in love with Sarah, who stood accused of stealing a haul of clothes, which she denied. The pair never wed, but they did live together. Sarah was 18 at the time she was convicted, and John was 34 at the time that he met and fell in love with her.
Yeah, I know that's typical of the time, but meh.
Although John and Sarah's story is a sweet tale of star-crossed lovers, not every relationship on board was based on love. In fact, the majority of them were a result of lust and desperation. After all, it was much more appealing to share such a long voyage with someone else than in solitude, or even worse, the prison cells that the women were supposed to be transported in.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't admit. Ugh, the options. No.
Fun fact. In 18th century Britain, the age of consent was 10.
No! No! What?
And while a majority of the women aboard the Lady Juliana were in their 20s and 30s, there were around 51 teenagers amongst their number.
No.
Another gross fact is that Jane Forbes was the youngest on the ship to find herself pregnant and giving birth at the age of 14.
Oh, God.
As far as the youngest girl, period, that title went to Mary Wade, who was 11 to 13 at the time that she was put on the ship. We will get back to Mary later on.
Oh, no.
The full breakdown by age for the women is as follows. 51 of them were between the ages of 10 and 19. 116 of them were between the ages of 20 and 29. 40 were between the ages of 30 to 39. 15 were between the ages of 40 and 49, and 8 were over the age of 50.
Hmm. That's surprising. I don't know why, but...
I wonder if they were hoping that some of the older women could help. I don't want to throw them into...
Like child rearing.
Yeah, I don't want to throw them into like the grandmother role, but that's kind of what I feel like their thinking was. Like, yeah.
Rear the children, educate them.
Or help set a quote-unquote good example for the younger women on what it means to be a homemaker. I don't know what their right. thought process was, but that's kind of what I assume they were going for. Mm-hmm. I should note that some of the women aboard this vessel were already mothers before they had been sentenced to time in New South Wales.
Yeah.
So they brought their children with them.
That's a small mercy, actually. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like, nope, 7 years, make some new kids.
Yep. Additionally, it was noted by John that no less than 20 children had been born while the Lady Juliana was in port at Rio de Janeiro, which can account for how long they spent there versus some of the other ports they visited, because they were there for like 45 mm-hmm. days. Historians argue that 5 to 7 children had been born on the ship, but regardless, the ship had been set up for this type of contingency after they had received a small donation of baby linens prior to setting sail from England.
They're like, baby linens. You're right. We should prepare for babies. Like,
we should prepare for babies. Yeah. I do want to note, even though it is very, very sad, not all of the children that were born survived. So it is entirely possible that John's account of 20 being born is accurate, but not all of them lived. Just throwing that out there. Not that I want to argue with historians, but I'm just saying stillbirth is a thing, but they're still babies.
Yeah, you don't know how many. Like, if the mother was really malnourished during this time, which is entirely possible and plausible, the babies could have not lived very long after all the weird diseases you can get traveling to.
The moniker of floating brothel set a precedent whenever the ship came into port. The women, although convicts, were given a pretty long leash when it came to being able to do what they wanted to earn some money.
Okay.
This included performing sexual acts for the various seamen. As John noted in his journals, quote, "We did not restrain the people on shore from coming on board through the day. The captains and seamen who were in port at the time paid us many visits," end quote. A woman named Elizabeth Barnsley, who had a long and storied history as a convict, stepped into a sort of madam role when it came to protecting the interests of the other women on board. In fact, John noted in his journal, quote, "She was considerate to her fellow convicts, who were poor. They were all anxious to serve her. She was as a queen among them," end quote.
Interesting. I would think that it would have been a man to initiate that. But I'm kind of glad it was a woman. Like, hopefully she wasn't super awful.
Yeah. It's believed that Elizabeth helped ensure that the women were able to keep part of their earnings during their times at port.
Good.
It's unclear how much involvement the captain and his crew had in the women's delicate dealings, which raises questions regarding coercion and consent.
Well, I think with a lot of sex work in general, consent is always kind of, I think, more in question than normal. Hopefully it's always there, but I can probably guess with a lot of accuracy that consent probably wasn't really given as freely back then.
I did want to note that from what I read about this Elizabeth Barnsley, she struck me as kind of like the unsinkable Molly Brown from the Titanic. Like, she was a very headstrong woman. She was, I think, more wealthy than the other ones. So I don't know if she was like a con woman, but she was not afraid to stand up to the men in the crew and also the captain and be like, look, they get to keep some of their money. Like, this is, they get to do it. She was very vocal about making sure that the women on the boat, even though they were convicts, that they weren't being taken advantage of.
Good. That's good to hear.
There wasn't much need for discipline on the Lady Juliana, even though she was transporting over 200 convicts.
Right.
The worst she saw was disorderly conduct as a result of drunkenness, with a woman named Nance Farrell as one of the main perpetrators. She would often have to wear a wooden barrel jacket.
Oh.
So, like, the thing where she couldn't move her arms to like drink.
No hands.
And if that didn't curb her enthusiasm for drink, they would flog her 12 times.
Oh. So kind of like doing it for your own good, but mm-hmm. just like not in a great way.
Yeah. I think it was...
just really tough love. Aggressive tough love.
Yeah, kind of like aggressive tough love. And I have no idea how often they would like put her back in one of the cells in the bottom part of the ship.
Right.
That's kind of like a drunk tank. I don't know, but that's what I found. So it's good to know that these women weren't being mistreated.
Yeah.
They had to be doing something pretty bad for the men to be like, actually, we gotta discipline you now.
Gotta stop hurting yourself.
And it wasn't just the men who benefited from the romantic entanglements on board the Lady Juliana. The men treated their paramours very well, providing the women with fresh fruits, vegetables, and meats, as well as generous rations. They also kept the ship very clean, encouraging the women to go on deck whenever they pleased. Whenever the ship docked along the way, they made an effort to purchase decent clothes for the women as well, ensuring they were as comfortable as possible and treating them as they would any other woman they were courting.
That's good to know that they weren't treating them less than because yep. of why they were there.
It's for these reasons that the women were in such good health when they did finally arrive in Sydney, or modern-day Sydney, on June 3rd, 1790, 11 months after they had set out from England.
Dang.
The same can't be said for women who traveled on other ships, where the death rate was extremely high.
Aww.
So the first fleet, if we go back, mm-hmm. which arrived with a 5.4% mortality rate, fared much better than the second fleet, who had arrived in June 1790 with a mortality rate of 40%.
Wow. That was not a good ship.
So that's all the other, this would have been four vessels now, or five, mm-hmm. if you consider the Georgiana, which had mm-hmm. shipwrecked. To give you an idea of just how bad it was for the second fleet, 928 male convicts had been aboard the Neptune, the Scarborough, and the Surprise. Of those, 26% passed away during the voyage, and nearly 40% of those who had survived were dead within months of landing at New South Wales.
That's crazy. So that to me would be a lot of malnutrition.
And sickness.
And just and sickness from like not being familiar with whatever diseases were either on the ship or in Australia.
267 people passed away at sea and 150 died after their arrival.
Mm.
The chaplain of the First Fleet, a man named Reverend Richard Johnson, witnessed the arrival of the Second Fleet on June 26th through the 28th. His account gives a terrifying glimpse into just how bad things were for the newest arrivals. Quote, I beheld a sight truly shocking to the feelings of humanity, a great number of them laying, some half, others nearly quite naked, without either bed or bedding, unable to turn or help themselves. Spoke to them as I passed along, but the smell was so offensive that I could scarcely bear it. The landing of these people was truly affecting and shocking. Great numbers were not able to walk, nor to move hand or foot. Such were slung over the shipside in the same manner as they would a cask, a box, or anything of that nature. Upon their being brought up to the open air, some fainted, some died upon deck, and others in the boat before they reached the shore. Some creeped upon their hands and knees, and some were carried upon the backs of others. End quote.
Wow. So it kind of sounds like if you got sick, that's it. Like nobody took care of you, nobody checked in on you. Because if you have that many varied states of duress,
mm-hmm.
once you were sick, you were done.
In regards to the other ships, they were under the management of privateers, and they only made one stop during the journey.
Mm.
Unlike the First Fleet, who stopped three times along the way to get fresh food and water, the Second Fleet kept their convicts below deck, leading to overcrowding and starvation.
Yeah.
The Neptune was by far the worst. Of the 499 convicts on board, only 72 arrived healthy.
Whoa. Like 72 in general? like everybody else died?
158 had died, and 269 were severely ill once they arrived.
Ugh, that's so crazy.
With the arrival of the Lady Juliana, which was the first vessel of the Second Fleet to make landfall, the percentage of women amongst the colony more than doubled, going from 20% up to 40%. The population also saw a boost due to all of the pregnancies that had taken place during the long journey from Britain. Mm-hmm. In fact, other than an unclear number of stillbirths that had taken place during the voyage, the Lady Juliana had only lost 5 people.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
And 4 of them was because they escaped.
Yeah. So only one person died.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The very low mortality rate can be due in part to the efforts of Lieutenant Thomas Edgar, RN, and ship surgeon Richard Alley, who had a relationship with Anne Mash, who was convicted for stealing a bushel of wheat. The conditions on the Lady Juliana were far and above what the women would have endured had they stayed in prison in England. As I mentioned before, prisons at the time were overcrowded and riddled with disease, especially Newgate, which is where most of them had come from.
Yeah. So they were pretty much the only ones that won the lottery out of, like, everybody.
Yep. At least on the Lady Juliana, they had access to medical care. And as I mentioned before, the ship was kept relatively clean. Mm-hmm. The women also weren't chained up like prisoners on other convict ships.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Lady Juliana flew under the Camden, Calvert, and King Company also saved them. This vessel was operated by Britain itself, whereas the other convict ships were farmed out to privateers who were more concerned with profits than with the livelihood of the people they were transporting.
That makes sense, because people were part of that. They were in the business of buying and selling people, too.
Not everyone was excited to see the women. At the time of their arrival, the colony was in a state of near starvation, and they were desperately awaiting a supply ship from Britain.
Oh, so when they saw that it was a British ship, they were really excited, and then less excited that it was not the full amount of rations and more people.
Yeah. In fact, Lieutenant Ralph Clark summed up the colonists' feelings best when he bluntly stated, quote, "more damn whores," end quote.
Oh, dang.
Given the fact that the colonists were already struggling to feed themselves, the additional over 200 mouths to feed posed an additional challenge, especially considering 90% of what people had been eating was rice riddled with weevils.
God.
They didn't have wine to eat the weevils, so they were like rice.
Didn't have priests that wrote very strongly worded letters asking the weevils to leave the rice.
No, they didn't.
The power of Christ compels you to leave that wheat and rice. Just a bunch of weevils just like rolling into the sea.
Yeah. You're right. Out to the outback we go.
We're going to turn into scary spiders now.
Yep. This is on you. Since 6 Marines had recently been hanged for stealing food, you can understand why this was such an issue.
Yeah.
A British newspaper included the following quip in an article about the ship's arrival. Quote, "The female convicts transported to Botany Bay by Lady Juliana were delivered very soon, with the arrival of 37 children, the exact number of men in the ship," end quote.
What?
Although some of that number was actually children that they brought with them, but it's fine. Not everything was all doom and gloom, though. In addition to its female cargo, the Lady Juliana also brought with it letters from loved ones, as well as news from Britain, such as the fact that the French Revolution had started in 1789, and that George Washington had been inaugurated as the first president of the United States.
Yeah, I was going to say this is really about that time.
Mm-hmm. The women were expected to wear convict dresses, which they were not happy about once they landed in New South Wales. They had been issued them once they boarded, and Captain Aiken had every right to throw their new dresses away once they arrived. So like the ones that his crew and him had bought.
Okay.
However, he instead held on to them, reasoning that the garments that they had been gifted by the crew and that they had bought and paid for with their own earnings would be of use to them when they arrived in Port Jackson. So he was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to be a dick and get rid of all their dresses. Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah. Good on him.
Not all of the women stayed at Port Jackson. In fact, a great number of them, 114, were sent to the colony at Norfolk Island. And then 80 others would later arrive with, I think, the next fleet.
Yeah.
In November of the following year, 100 couples were married on the island by the Reverend, but there are no surviving records of the ceremonies that were performed.
That's kind of nice, though, as opposed to when he first got there and there was just like rotting corpses, essentially.
He's like, oh, something happy.
Yay. You guys smell better. Great.
No dead and dying people. I'm so happy.
Score.
Unlike their fate in Britain, should they have stayed, the women thrived in the penal colony. They were able to utilize their entrepreneurial spirits to discover new ways that they could better the lives of each other and others in this new world. An example of this is a woman named Molly Morgan, who donated freely to help establish schools, hospitals, and churches in the growing colony. Another thing is that the British moral codes of the day didn't always apply to these women in New South Wales. Back home, having a child out of wedlock would have marked them, you know, as bastards or less than.
That's true. Yeah.
In New South Wales, it didn't matter. They were legitimate as far as the governor was concerned.
Good. I think you would have to. Otherwise, your entire population is bad.
Like, by the eyes of the church or whatever, or mm-hmm. the government. I don't know. The following poem was written about the Lady Juliana from the viewpoint of Sarah Whitlam, even though it's called the Lady Julian. Quote, as we waited in chain upon the quay, waiting the transport to the far colony, sentenced to 7 years parts overseas without any hope of return. When I set eyes on that huge prison ship, tall, black, foreboding, and how I felt sick, when the sailors wolf whistled and shouted coarse jeers, we knew what they had on their minds. We were taken far across the sea, far from old England to captivity, convicted criminals every one. We were taken by Lady Julian. When the ship stopped at ports along Journey's Way, some of the women, they would ply their trade, and many a man came to sample their wares on board the Lady Julian. As for me, I caught the steward's eye, and he became to me the love of my life, and I bore him a bonny boy to his delight whilst on the Lady Julian. We sailed into Sydney Cove after a year, but ours was the only ship then to appear. The colony starving and living in fear, they needed no more mouths to feed. Though I survived the ordeal ashore, my young heart was broken by that ship once more. My bonny John Nicol sailed far from my life on board the Lady Julian. Time has now passed and I've married again, but I'll make sure my boy, he never forgets, when the three of us sailed on the high seas back then aboard the Lady Julian, end quote.
That's really sad.
Yeah. So John was forced to return to Britain after the Lady Juliana landed in New South Wales, leaving Sarah and their child, John Nicol Jr., behind.
Yep, because he would have to go grab more people, right?
Yep. And although he made several attempts to make his way back to her, he was unable to.
He never did?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like they really had something.
Yeah. After John was forced to return to Britain, Sarah married convict John Cohen Walsh, a man who had traveled over as part of the First Fleet. The pair married on July 27th, 1790, with Sarah signing her name with an X, as it's unlikely she actually knew how to read or write.
Oh.
Following her wedding, nothing more was recorded about her. Meanwhile, John passed away in his 80s in Edinburgh, plagued with regret that he was never able to reunite with Sarah and his son.
Yeah, I bet. That's so sad.
And I read that, like, she married this guy, like, the day after the Lady Juliana, like, left port to go back to England.
I bet.
I'm pretty sure it was just so she'd be taken care of.
Yeah. I mean, or so she'd be protected, potentially.
Yeah.
Because, depending with his status, she would need to make sure her son is protected.
Caroline Chisholm, another of Juliana's women, provided accommodations and gainful employment to over 1,000 women and young girls, while Mary Wade, so remember I mentioned Mary up at the top? Mm-hmm. She was the youngest girl on board.
Yeah. She's now Queen of Wales.
She has gone down in history as one of the founding mothers of Australia, with more than 5 generations of her family living in the country. She had 21 children.
Oh my goodness.
7 of which went on to have children of their own. And at the time of her death, she had over 300 living descendants.
Wow. I mean, you go, Mary. You got good genes.
Yeah.
That's strong genes.
She spread like wildfire all over Australia. Yeah.
She's like, you know what? It's going to be me.
I'm going to make my mark right here.
Yep. Yep.
Following the fulfillment of their sentence, many of the women chose to stay in New South Wales rather than return to England. Anne Marsh, for example, had been abandoned by her ship husband, and instead of viewing this with despair, she started and ran a number of her own businesses, including a ferry company and a liquor shop.
I feel like history really discounts how sturdy and like steadfast women can be. I mean, just look at all of the amazing people raised by single mothers mm-hmm. all the time to this mm-hmm. day. Just like, yep. We're resilient. You throw us into a freaking wild country, we're going to make the best of it.
Like Mary Wade, many women became the founding mothers of Australia. Others include Rachel Turner, who married Thomas Moore. I think it's Moreland is named after them. There's Mary Pardo, who gave birth to the youngest child on board, the Lady Juliana. There was Eleanor Higgins and Elizabeth Perry, who was the first of the female convicts to be emancipated. And Elizabeth Steele, who was the first known deaf Australian.
Nice. Like, I'm proud of these women, but at the same time, I'm sad because of the Indigenous women and the Indigenous people, you know? It's just the same thing of, like, America. Like, yay, cool. We got our independence. But, like, we really robbed so many others of theirs. Shout out to the Indigenous mothers of Australia.
And as for the Lady Juliana herself, she was repaired before arriving back in England on October 26, 1791, after first traveling to China to pick up a cargo of tea for the East India Company.
Hmm.
And that's the Lady Juliana.
Interesting. That's, you know, you don't think of ships like that in terms of when they were doing like colonization of all these different companies. And it's kind of nice to be able to identify a semi-good one.
Mm-hmm.
In a seedier part of history. Like, it did improve certain people's lives. Like, it did have some good.
Well, and it's like, yes, it is awful that they were taken from their home country and, like, thrust in an entirely new environment. But at the mm-hmm. same time, the chances of them getting out of prison alive were super low. Like,
this was quite literally their only chance at survival.
Yeah. Most of them probably would have perished from disease in prison, or in the case of some of them, they would have been put to death. You know, so this was really a saving grace for a lot of them in a way. Mm-hmm. The methods don't justify the means, but at the same time, like, the fact that they were given this opportunity to kind of start fresh after they served their 7-year term.
And they flourished. They did more than just start fresh.
Yeah. Like, they were given the opportunity to actually like do well by themselves and better mm-hmm. themselves. And I don't know what percentage of them did go back to Britain. I said that really weird, Britain. But I think the majority of them stayed, probably just because it was, one, easier to stay than to go back. And given the state of how some of the other people were when they, like, arrived, mm-hmm. with, like, how many of those men dying on the voyage, who knows what sort of crew you would have been riding with back to Britain.
Right. Like, how safe you actually were.
Yeah, exactly. How likely were you to actually arrive intact?
Well, and if you started fresh, too, like, mm-hmm. your past did not define you there. Why would you go back where your past condemned you?
Mm-hmm.
just wouldn't be worth it. Yeah. You can see why they stayed.
Looking for more content? You can find us online at yieldcrimepodcast.com. If you'd like to see pictures from this week's episode, not to mention bonus content and funny memes, make sure to follow us on Twitter at yieldcrimepod and on Facebook and Instagram at yieldcrimepodcast. On TikTok? Of course you are. Follow us at yieldcrimepodcast.
Hello, twisted humans.
Do you find yourself wanting to know more about the latest murder, conspiracy, cult, or haunting?
Then this is the podcast for you.
In 1952, there was a record high of UFOs reported. 1,500 sightings.
There has been evidence of human sacrifice, devil worship, and it is haunted by more spirits than can be counted.
A family of two adults and two kids reportedly saw a giant flying thing with glowing red eyes.
And meanwhile, the family's nanny that helped Veronica to care for her and Lucian's children was found bludgeoned to death in the basement of their family home.
I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sierra. And this is Twisted and Uncorked.
This month's podcast plug is the Twisted and Uncorked podcast. From Victoria, British Columbia to Cincinnati, Ohio, Alicia and Sierra have a twisted fascination with the dark, spooky, and unimaginable. Every Tuesday, they rotate through categories including conspiracy, cult, disappeared, haunted, murderless, serial killer, unsolved, and listener suggested. And we will have a link to their show in the show notes.
Nice.
What is something good you'd like to share?
We're almost settled in our new home.
Woo!
I'm hoping that after this week, we will be officially settled and ready to go. One of the things I'm really excited about this week is our landlord is having the yard get assessed and like readied just because of them building a house. There's like this giant pile of like underbrush and nastiness, which I'm assuming like the machine, one of the cranes or something to like help build the house was sitting there forever. So I'm happy that we'll be able to kind of start fresh, hopefully a little less risk of like ticks and fleas and all that issue that we have here. We had a fairly peaceful day yesterday and my smoochy bear, my cat is finally reunited with us. She always takes moves the hardest out of everyone, which after this move, I think Chief might be
the new king.
Yeah, I think he might be having the hardest time. But yeah, Smooch usually gets like UTIs from the stress. And it's pretty much guaranteed whenever she's exposed to us moving. And so my parents very kindly took her in for like about a month. Just so we could slowly move and comfortably move. And then by the time she saw the new house, it was settled enough to where she'd feel safe. She did get sick on the way, but she gets sick once a month anyway because of the amount of hair she ingests cleaning herself. So unfortunately for her, her day of getting sick coincided to the day of coming back home to her new house. But she had a shower, she cleaned herself up, and she's been super happy ever since. So my heart feels happy because I have all of my babies in one roof. What about you?
So Charlie has not been eating, and
he's going on a hunger strike again.
This isn't uncommon, I guess, for this time of year. I was speaking with the people that I purchase his rats from, and this is like breeding season. And so they tend to not eat as much during breeding season, which would explain why when I did last purchase a rat, he was not interested in it at all.
He's cutting.
It ran rampant inside his enclosure, and so I had to do like a deep clean.
Oh no.
And it also chewed through the cord for his humidifier. So.
Oh no, Charlie.
I was very angry when I saw that. But the good news is I gave his enclosure another like deep clean. He's got new mulch and everything's clean. And I took him out for a while I was cleaning it, and Thomas was like, wow, he's a big boy. He's a lot heavier than I remember him being. And I was like, yeah, he's grown quite a bit. He's my derpy boy.
Your sweet cheese?
My good time boy.
Got something you want to say? Shoot us an email over at yieldcrimepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your story ideas, see any gifts you send our way, or if you just want to say hello. We're pretty friendly. Speaking of friendly, if you'd like to have real-time conversations with us, consider joining our Discord over at the Cultivate Network. You can chat with us over at the Old Crimers Cubby, or catch up with any of the other great creators that are part of the Cultivate family of podcasts. Just click the link in our show notes or over on our link tree to get started today.
A great way to support the show if you want to help out but you can't do so financially is to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Good Pods, CastBox, Podcast Addict, and or Audible. And the last sale of the month will be taking place April 24th through the 28th, where you can enjoy 35% off everything in our TeePublic shop. We will have a link in the show notes to go to our shop, and we also will be publishing it on our social media channels.
Nice.
And on that note, as always, I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Madison.
And we'll see you next time with another tale
as old as crime.